I slightly changed the plan of this lecture today. Some of you have asked me various questions which I would like to answer, and the organizers asked me to elaborate on some of the topics I was talking about yesterday. And so I would, perhaps except for a remark at the very end, I would not talk much about these two-dimensional aspects of the QEG space-times, but rather would describe how to make contact with reality, in quotes and quotes, of the within the framework I described yesterday. First of all, I would like to answer in, I hope, precise terms, a question some of you have asked me repeatedly, and I must admit I did not really understand what your worries were and what precisely was behind your question. And that was the question about what is the logical status of Einstein-Hilbert, of the Einstein-Hilbert action within our approach. And I think some of you had in mind the question, how do I tell my equations that I'm dealing with gravity and not, say, nuclear physics or hydrodynamics or whatever other field where the formally the same kind of flow equation can be applied to? And the answer is the following. The place where the idea that we are trying to describe something like gravity enters is in the selection of theory space. So what we fix in our approach is theory space. What we use as an input is we want to derive a flow on a space of functionals, and what I have to put in is just what this space of functionals is. What are the arguments? What are the symmetries? And gravity, hopefully, or an attempt at describing gravity, is the choice you consider a functional depending on our two metrics and the ghosts, and you require these functionals to be diffeomorphism invariant. This is the input, this is the only input, and all the rest is a consequence. Once you have this space, then you can cook up a coarse graining procedure and write down the exact renormalization group equation. That was crucial in our formalism, that there is no dependence on something like a bare action inside the right-hand side here. So fixing the space, the right-hand side is fixed, the beta is fixed, the vector field is fixed. So you have the vector field and you can look for zeros of that vector field. And within asymptotic safety, you would say zeros, fixed point actions, gamma star, are potential bare actions. In general, you might expect to find many, gamma star prime, gamma star double prime. And only when you actually try to solve these fixed point equations, you come to the point where special metrics play a special role. At this meeting, background independence is a big issue. Background independence means no special metric plays a specific role. Here you have a sort of, it's not like background independence precisely, but in a similar spirit, in this setting, also no specific action plays any specific role. So up to this point, all actions are equal, and here you look for zeros and you find specific actions which qualify as bare actions. And to answer the question where Einstein-Hilbert comes in, Einstein-Hilbert is the lowest order term of the only fixed point found so far, which was obtained within a truncation, a polynomial truncation in the curvature scalar. This is the place where it comes in. But it is, some of you ask questions like, do you use Einstein-Hilbert and then evolve upward to find out what is the bare action? This is not the attitude. It's not that you measure in the laboratory what is a good Hamiltonian for general relativity and then you evolve that upward. That's not the philosophy. The philosophy is really to derive them as fixed point conditions. Okay. Yes? This is work in progress, and the answer is not known yet. It could be different because as soon as you allow torsion to circulate inside loops, you are not guaranteed that you describe the same. And if you have a field bind and a spin connection here, again, restricted by certain invariances, this defines a new universality class. And there is no a priori reason why the result should be the same, but it's not known the answer for the time being. Okay, so this was one remark I wanted to make, and the other issue I would like to discuss now is how from this infinity of trajectories here you can we switch off this also? Of trajectories, you can try to make contact with reality in the sense of low energy physics. Now, of course, we don't know at infinite precision what the trajectories really are. So I would like to explain to you this procedure of matching the set of possible trajectories with one which is perhaps realized in nature. I will try to describe the overall philosophy by means of the Einstein-Hilbert truncation. Whether or not this is a good approximation is not clear yet. So just to describe the philosophy, let me do that now. Yes?
Before you remove this picture, would it be possible for you to show the point on this graph that is measured in the lab, the value?
Yes, that is what I'm going to do. In step by step and in 15 minutes, you will know. That's precisely what I would like to then to explain to you where on this plot we are living here. But before actually doing this, I have to comment on something I have not yet told you, namely, actually, these trajectories cannot all be continued from infinity down to k equals zero because of an infrared difficulty. Those running to the left, they can. The one which goes to the Gaussian fixed point also can, but the ones running towards positive lambdas, they cannot be continued. They break down at lambda equals 1/2, precisely here. There is a singularity in the beta functions. This phenomenon of not being extendable down to the infrared, this is a typical symptom of a breakdown of the truncation in Yang-Mills theory. You have very similar phenomena. So theory space in this truncation is just a half plane. It's very easy to see where this comes from. These are formulas you saw actually already. This is the 2x2 system for the Einstein-Hilbert truncation. Beta functions, the anomalous dimension, B1, B2, B lambda is what appears here. And the only point you should notice is there are these threshold functions, the phis, defined in this manner. And what you can infer from this integral representation is that all of them have a singularity at argument equal to -1. And because here the arguments are always -2 lambda, the singularity occurs at lambda equals 1/2, where this denominator vanishes. So the flow is constrained to this half plane. I can show you an even simpler equation, namely for a special case, the sharp cutoff and also some other choices. You can easily solve explicitly for these integrals, and then the flow equations assume this simple form. You have a logarithmic singularity and you have a first order pole. And here you see very easily lambda equals 1/2 is singular, or stated differently in terms of dimension full quantities. I recall the capital lambda is Perhaps I should write this down because it reappears over and over. The capital lambda, which on some transparencies was denoted little lambda bar, is the little lambda times k squared. The little lambda without the bar is dimensionless. So you multiply 1/2 by k squared for this value of the dimension full cosmological constant, the flow breaks down. Now it's quite instructive to investigate how this happens and why it happens. That's summarized here. Well, these first trajectories, that what we call of type 1a, and the separatrix we call type 2a, they are fine, can be extended, and they lead to negative or vanishing cosmological constants in the infrared. Those of that is what I'm going to show when I move the. You will see it here. One second. So lambda is negative all in all these cases, or it is zero, whereas on these type 3a cases here, the capital lambda terminates, this is the real function lambda of k, and at a certain point lambda of k hits this curve capital lambda equals 1/2 k squared corresponding to the little lambda equals 1/2, and at this point you cannot continue the flow, you have a singularity. And to answer your question, that is just the important issue. The point is, as you approach this termination scale from above, eta Newton goes to minus infinity, implying that the slope of the curve g as a function of k goes to minus infinity. So what this means is when you come from large scales and gradually approach this termination scale, then g starts increasing and finally to diverge. So as I said, this is a very typical symptom that infrared effects typically lead to the generation of non-local terms. All those are omitted, and also many local terms, of course, in this truncation. And so the truncation is not general enough to encapsulate these new effects. For instance, QCD perturbation theory would have a similar phenomenon when you come to the scale where confinement and so on sets in. You have similar troubles with two simple truncations. So it's clear in this vicinity here, Einstein-Hilbert is insufficient. You should include further invariants. It's technically extremely difficult to do that. Now the question is, this increase of g, is it a physical effect? Can you see it in the real world? Or is it just an indication that you should do something better, use a better indication? The answer to this question is not really clear, but it could be you see something as long as Einstein-Hilbert is still valid, or perhaps you don't see anything. That is perhaps not the really important issue here. What I would like to discuss now is where in real nature could we expect this termination scale to be? Where is really, at what value of k is the little lambda equals to 1/2? Pardon me? Yes, that will I will derive now at what. Well, that is that. Now that diverges because lambda. Yes. That is because lambda is finite. Lambda is 1/2 k termination squared. That is a finite number and g explodes. This is indicated here, the g somehow all of a sudden. explodes. I don't want to overemphasize this phenomenon. I just would like to tell you, just to put gravity into a framework which is more familiar perhaps, that this kind of phenomenon is very well known and well understood in different applications of renormalization group equations, namely the basic mechanism is of this growth of G is a so-called instability-driven renormalization. You remember the effective propagator is this object. This is what appears on the right-hand side of the flow equation. Once you do the truncation, you get something like P squared. This is the eigenvalue of the covariant D'Alembertian plus K squared minus 2 lambda. This is what appears in the denominators. And now you see that for positive lambda, you have a pole at P squared equals a constant times, or K squared times lambda minus 1 half. So this is something where in the denominator vanishes for a certain eigenvalue, or in flat space you could say for a certain momentum. And this kind of phenomenon is exactly the same as in scalar field theory when you study spontaneous symmetry breaking. Positive cosmological constant corresponds to a negative mass square to the Brogan phase, while negative is a positive mass corresponding to the symmetric phase. M squared corresponds to minus lambda here. And it is very well known in this RG approach to spontaneous symmetry breaking and critical phenomena that it is very difficult to describe spontaneous symmetry breaking. Remember, in the beginning, we saw this W-shaped potential, which under the evolution developed into this non-analytic potential with a flat bottom, non-analytic. And if you want to describe that, you must be so general as to admit a non-analytic effective potential. And that cannot be done in any polynomial truncation. So it is fairly clear that our simple truncation, not any truncation in finitely many powers of the Riemann tensor, is capable of solving this problem. Well, we know what happens in spontaneous symmetry breaking in scalar theories, but here the answer is not known. How does the theory cure its infrared problems? It is believed that it will do so, but it's not known how. This is a very complicated non-perturbative problem. Okay, but now I will leave this issue aside, just mention that there is this unsolved infrared sector. And now let's ask the question, at what scale would we expect it to occur, this problem? Or more generally, the question is, which one of these trajectories which you saw on this two-dimensional plot might represent the running of G and lambda in the real world under the hypothesis, very strong hypothesis, that up to this termination scale, or a little bit above, Einstein-Hilbert is a good approximation. So the first important observation is that this termination of the trajectory can be deferred, can be delayed very much if you pick a trajectory such that it gets very close to the Gaussian fixed point and spends here, the motion is slow, here the motion is slow. So if it gets very close to the Gaussian fixed point, it spends a lot of renormalization group time here, then finally moves to the right. And if you use up a lot of time here, then you will arrive here very late, meaning that the termination appears at a very low scale. So if you squeeze the trajectory very close into this corner, then you can make it as late as you like, the breakdown. From the formulas I showed you before, one observation will be needed later on, namely the so-called turning point. This turning point here, where the lambda derivative changes sign, has coordinates lambda t and g t, which are of the same order of magnitude. There is this phi 2 coefficient in between, that's of order 1, all this bracket. So roughly, it's equal lambda t and g t. That we shall use in a moment. And the other piece of information we shall use for analyzing the trajectory nature is the linearization of the flow about the Gaussian fixed point, something very simple. You easily obtain little g goes like k squared, little lambda in this way, or in terms of dimension, full quantities, little g is constant in the linear regime, and capital G is constant, and capital lambda runs like k to the fourth. Here this kt is the scale parameter at which this turning point is passed. So I parameterize the theory in terms of gt, lambda t, and kt, but only two are independent. We have a two-parameter family of trajectories. Question, which one is really observed in nature. Now, the first piece of information from astrophysics we use is at the present Hubble scale, if I interpret the observed cosmological constant as the running one evaluated at the present Hubble scale, that is claimed or known to be positive. So at a low scale, lambda is positive. If we pick one from our family of the Einstein-Hilbert theory space, then we must conclude that the one in nature is of this type 3a, which breaks down, or it is, I mean, in nature, we would then think it's an extension, which you would obtain by adding more terms to the truncation. So now we come exactly to your question, where do we live, sort of? Where are our everyday scales on this trajectory? Well, first of all, it's important to keep in mind that these plots always are plots for the dimension less g and lambda. Now, first of all, let's ask, what do these plots look like if there are no quantum effects, if no renormalization effects take place? That is, when g and lambda, the dimension full ones, are constant, then because of these factors relating them to the dimension less ones, you see that the dimension less lambda goes like 1 over dimension less Newton constant in this case. So these hyperbolas here, these are the classical or canonical RG trajectories. If your flow equation or flow pattern looks like this, this means everything is trivial. The dimension full quantities don't run. So now just compare where does the actual trajectory look like a piece of this one, and you see here below the lower part is essentially classical. The blue dotted line in this plot here, this is a canonical one, and here between these points, I call them P1 and P2, you have a regime where capital G, like here, capital G and capital lambda don't run. And this regime where G capital and lambda capital is constant, that is classical physics. So here we have classical general relativity, and that is more or less a subset of the linear regime of the Gaussian. Pardon? Capital G and capital lambda don't. No, this is little lambda. No. If capital G, the situation in which capital G and capital lambda don't run is these hyperbolas. So when capital G and capital lambda don't run, then little lambda goes like 1 over k squared and little g goes like k squared, they are inverse proportional, and in the parametric little g, little lambda plot, they are hyperbolas. That I come to that, yes. Yes. For the time being, we don't identify it. We just look sort of at the topology of the curves, and we just look at the actual trajectory, compare it to the canonical one, and all I'm saying is the only place where you can hope to recover classical relativity, or where you actually do recover classical relativity, is on this segment, which is part of the linear regime. And I showed you there the capital G doesn't run at all. So here somewhere we should, if at all, be able to establish to general relativity. Now, yes?
How do you know that the measurable quantities, I mean the real world quantities of our world, are not wrong? Because what you said, I mean, the cosmological constant, you measure only at one scale, so you don't really know what would be the value of the.
No, I mean, of course, I mean, if they run, this is even more interesting for us, and for the sake of the argument, I just assume very conservatively that they don't run. I mean, I assume they don't run as long as somebody tells me, astrophysicist tells me they do run. I mean, this is just the point. It's very exciting. You are absolutely right. It's a very exciting idea that the cosmological constant runs even between meters and kiloparsecs. And in this range, we have not measured it. We have no tool of measuring it. And in fact, I mean, from the formulas, it's clear between, I will show you in the end, between micrometers and the Planck scale, it runs enormously. We shall see. But now let's be systematic and ask how can we fix the trajectory. Now, conceptually, this is exactly like in electrodynamics. In electrodynamics, you have the electron mass and the electron charge as two parameters which label a two-parameter set of RG trajectories, and you have to decide which of these trajectories is picked by nature by measuring these two quantities. Likewise, here we have a two-parameter family, so we have to measure two quantities to pick one trajectory. Now, the idea is to fix a certain, call it laboratory scale, K-lab, where you do the experiments, and there you measure capital G and capital lambda. Then you can compute from that little g and little lambda simply by the definitions. And if you, for convenience, define the Planck mass and length in terms of capital G at K lab, then you also can express things in form of these ratios. It's not important now. What is important is if you do these measurements at the same scale, that's the assumption, then you have a pair G lambda, which is a point in theory space, and through every point in theory space there runs only one trajectory, and so having done this measurement you have fixed your trajectory. Now what would that mean if you boldly insert the numbers we think are correct? Is your point comes in, if I believe what the experimentalists tell us, that there is no significant running of Newton's constant between, say, 1 meter and one astronomical unit, then the capital G is always this constant value, and that converts then to a little g at the scale of 1 meter, inverse of 10 to the minus 70, just insert numbers, and at one astronomical unit, it's 10 to the minus 92. And now we, this is the one coordinate. Now we would like to do the same for little lambda, and there the problem arises you were mentioning, namely we do not have measurements of the cosmological constant at the scale of a meter, nor we have at the scale of the solar system. So I will be very conservative for a moment and not assume that our truncation is valid in cosmology. So I will, for the sake of the argument, I will not use any specific value of the cosmological constant, but just give a rough estimate of what little lambda between meters and astronomical units could be. You easily can derive a lower bound, an upper bound on lambda. Namely, we are sitting here in this room. Let's assume the diameter of this room is the inverse of K-lab. And you all agree that in this room, the curvature of space-time, which if the cosmological constant at the scale of this room is this, then by the conventional Einstein equations, this is lambda at that scale to the minus 1/2. That's the radius of space-time curvature as an order of magnitude aspect. In terms of little lambda, this means little lambda at this scale to the minus 1/2 times K-lab inverse. Now the observations tell us at the scale of 1 meter, the radius of curvature is much, much, much larger than 1 meter. And this implies that the little lambda at K-lab is much smaller than unity. So the only thing which I want to assume for the moment is that little g and little lambda are much, much smaller than unity for all k's within the general relativity regime.
Question?
Yes?
It's about, I mean, there's something very, I feel uncomfortable about talking about the rounding lambda. Because here you're talking about it without taking into account the dynamics. So if you take lambda as being defined as being a component of the energy momentum tensor proportional to vector mu, then if this energy momentum tensor is conserved, then lambda is constant, right? By then. So you cannot have in a diffusion environment theory a lambda that depends on the scale or place.
Well, I mean, that was all our model building we did. I mean, these issues, that is a very different topic. I mean, No, I mean, we have many models in cosmology where you can run lambda in a diffeomorphism. No, that is, No, there are models with, there are many models. I mean, there have been decades of model building, just model building with time-dependent cosmological constant, and this renom...
It's not a cosmological constant.
No, but I mean, this is, I mean, I'm not talking now about any such models. I'm not, in this talk, I omit all issues where you would have to seriously identify in a precise way K with anything observable.
But I guess the point is that what is the physical meaning of the running of K? If you know that in the truncation you're working with, you cannot have any K dependence on lambda. It's incomplete, let's say.
No. No. I mean, first of all, we have written a lot of papers where we have dynamics where this is included, and the second remark is it plays no role here. And the third remark is in this regime, I agree with you. There is anyhow, in my conservative evaluation now, there is anyhow no running. I mean, it's 3 points. The first is,
say, okay.
There is no problem with diffeomorphism invariance. The second is, this kind of models, cosmology with running lambda, we are not doing here. And the third is, in this P piece here, lambda anyhow does not run. And my point is now I would like to understand where is, for instance, this turning point. What are these coordinates of the turning point? Or you can have a much more direct argument and say little g and little, oh, okay, let's leave that. You can now compute what is eta. If g is that tiny, then you get something extremely small, which confirms the running of capital G is so, because eta governs the running of capital G, that is below all observable effects. Now we have this situation. We saw gt and lambda t, the turning point coordinates, are approximately equal. This is smaller than the onset of classical relativity regime lambda at k1, which is the scale where gr becomes valid, and k2 is the scale where it potentially becomes invalid, where you are getting close to 1/2. And as this gr regime is, as we saw, at small lambda, this implies that little g and little lambda, the turning point, for the turning point, are very much smaller than 1. Later on, we shall see something like 10 to the minus 60. The point I want to make is that is all what this reasoning is about, that it seems, if you really want to match data against the Einstein-Hilbert trajectory, then you learn that the trajectory picked by nature gets unnaturally small, close to the Gaussian fixed point, extremely close to the Gaussian fixed point. And that means it spends a very long renormalization group time near the Gaussian fixed point. And as a consequence, the termination, this reaching of the little lambda equals 1/2, where possibly there are these infrared effects or perhaps not, that this is extremely delayed, anomalously delayed. That is the key observation about this particular trajectory nature seems to like. You easily can get an estimate for this turning point scale, the scale when the trajectory curves around. In the linear regime, capital G by the linearization equation was this expression, turning point G over scale squared. It doesn't run, is the measured 1 over m Planck. So from this equation, you learn the turning point scale is square root gt times Planck mass. This is much smaller, so you get a hierarchy, turning point scale much smaller than Planck mass. You can also get a very simple estimate for the termination scale. Let's forget about all nonlinearities in the beta functions. The Black equation is the linearized formula, linearized by the Gaussian fixed point. Now you define k termination by requiring this value to be equal to 1/2.
Can I just ask a question about the hierarchy? Kt is much smaller than Planck mass. Is that in contradiction with what you wrote earlier?
No.
Because, I mean, the turning point is above the physical scale. And, I mean...
Only very little. No, I mean, I did not use the word physical scale.
No, but I mean, well, where GR is tested, and you put it more down the renormalization flow,
yes,
than the turning point.
Yes.
And I mean, that was the scale of 1 meter to one astronomical.
No, that was just for fun. I mean, I'm not claiming that at 1 meter there is anything. I have not yet determined KT. That will come out only on the next page, but it is consistent with these inequalities I have written.
It should be bigger than the scales we're used to, according to the graph you had previously.
Yes, and that's the case. I mean, the turning point is upstream compared to the GR regime, and I'm not yet talking about the GR regime. That comes on the next. That is this equation now, the second. Namely, from this argument, you infer that the termination scale is GT times M Planck without the square root. So if GT is very small, then you get a completely symmetric double hierarchy, you could call it. The termination scale over the turning point scale is suppressed by square root GT, and in turn, the termination scale is below the Planck scale by the same factor square root GT. And this, in fact, is, we shall see in a moment, in nature is 30 orders of magnitude, if you believe in this fits. Now, but the general lesson you learn here, I think this is the important general lesson to understand why has nature decided sort of to pick this tiny value of square root GT, or how would the world change if that was larger? And the answer is very simple. This fine-tuning must happen. You must tune the trajectory to get unnaturally close to the Gaussian fixed point, because otherwise you would not get a classical regime anywhere. If you take generic initial conditions without this fine-tuning to get in the corner at the Gaussian fixed point, for generic initial conditions without making GT small, the termination scale, the turning point scale, and the Planck scale are all of the same order of magnitude. So what happens is you spiral out of the non-Gaussian fixed point and immediately run into this regime where the truncation breaks down. So that would mean for such trajectories, classical general relativity is valid nowhere. And if you believe that there are these strong infrared effects, then that would mean you would not get a classical regime unless you do this fine-tuning. Now you could ask, in the GR regime, what is the value of the cosmological constant there? I told you in the linearized approximation, the running capital G is constant, the running capital lambda is the k to the fourth running. This is what everybody knows, that the quartic divergences of Feynman diagrams. Now, if you are a little bit below kT, then very soon, because of the fourth power, this is negligible. And the classical regime is defined by the fact that you can omit this k to the fourth. And then this prefactor here is the constant, cosmological constant of classical relativity. This. And you can write that as gt squared times m Planck squared, just inserting the results we derived on the previous page about this hierarchy. And this leads you to this beautiful conclusion that in the classical regime, if it exists, the cosmological constant is automatically small. Namely, lambda divided by m Planck squared, where this m Planck is defined in terms of the GR Newton constant. This is of the order GT squared, which is much, much smaller than 1. So the conclusion is, if you are given, that's the situation we are in, we have the Lagrangian of classical general relativity, and the experimentalists tell us there is some truth in it, it works, classical relativity is valid. Classical GR is applicable within certain scales. This implies that there is a long classical regime, and this implies, as we saw to get these hierarchies, that GT is much smaller than unity. But then, by this conclusion, it is implied that the laboratory sort of a cosmological constant, the one in this GR regime, is much smaller than the Planck mass defined in terms of the laboratory Newton constant. So this is a very important conclusion, I think, which essentially just comes from this topology of the trajectories and this simplistic fit, namely, when there exists a regime where classical relativity is applicable, then automatically lambda is small there, because if it was not small, then you would, at least if these infrared effects are there, you would immediately get strong renormalizations, and classical relativity is nowhere applicable. And in a certain sense, I emphasize in a certain sense, this solves, in quotes and quotes, the cosmological constant problem by making it part of a much more general problem, namely, how do you have to define, or which one of these trajectories you have to pick if you want to get a classical limit of the kind we observe around us. And the claim is, if you want to get a classical limit of the kind we observe it, then lambda must be much smaller than unity. So if you have a classical world, then you get the small cosmological constant for free. Yes? Not at all, basically, because this basically only use the linearization about the Gaussian fixed point, which in the fit to the real data included the renormalization effect of the matter, and also this instability of the graviton I mentioned that cannot go away basically when you add matter, because, well, except for the photon, which is not important here, there are no massless particles at the far, far infrared, and you would need to cure by matter effects this infrared business. You would need massless particles, because the heavy ones, which are heavy at that scale, decouple and have no impact. So this is, I did not discuss matter separately, but that is totally unlikely to change anything. Yeah, there is only the only one which comes to your mind probably is the photon, but the photon couples to massive electrons and so only, and this, all the massive charged particles, and it's hard to see how it could cure this graviton instability. I think that is, in that respect, this is a fairly robust argument. To make a long story short, you also could argue as follows. You ask, which is the scale where general relativity perhaps breaks down? Where is lambda, the little lambda of order 1/2? Well, little lambda is always capital lambda over k squared. If I, for capital lambda, use the lab value, then the termination scale is of the order of square root of the lab cosmological constant. Very simplistic. I mean, there's basically nothing intelligent entering here. But this simple statement has a very remarkable consequence, namely, now you could really dare, let's dare to identify this lab scale or extend our laboratory up to the visible universe, up to the present Hubble horizon, and let's dare to insert for this lambda lab the observed value at cosmological scales. Now the observations tell us the vacuum energy density is of the order of magnitude of the critical density, which means the lambda is of the order of the Hubble parameter squared today, so I interpreted it as k at this scale. Hubble today is Hubble today squared. Now take this equation and insert Hubble squared, and what you get is the termination scale Hubble zero, the present Hubble scale. So This, I think, is the funny outcome of this fit. The scale, the termination scale for this unnatural trajectory, which follows if you believe in Einstein-Hilbert and if you interpret the measure G and lambda as lab values, then the conclusion is that the termination scale where Einstein-Hilbert breaks down is precisely the present Hubble scale. So now you can again listen to your astrophysics colleagues and or be very conservative and assume that between the laboratory, I mean really the laboratory on Earth and the cosmological scales, there are not many orders of magnitude different. I mean, not 120 and these huge numbers which are usually appearing in this business, just one or two or those we would ignore for the sake of the argument. Then we can complete the calculation of our turning point scale. Namely, then I interpret this lambda lab over M Planck squared. Remember, that was the formula for the turning point coordinate as H naught over M Planck squared. And this ratio, we know this is 10 to the minus 120. And that implies that the turning point coordinates are of the order 10 to the minus 60, and that this double hierarchy given by the square root of this number is 10 to the minus 30. So the turning point scale is just in the middle between the Hubble scale today and the Planck scale. And well, you know this number, then if you insert numbers, k to the minus 1 is 10 to the 30, Planck length is 10 to the minus 3 centimeters. So this, the scale when this point is passed is 10 to the minus 3 centimeters. Here, in this regime, there is the k to the 4 running. Here, the k to the 4 has died off. And as you move to the right, then at a certain point here in cosmology, little g is then 10 to the minus 120. Little lambda is of the order 1/2 or 1. And somewhere here between where we have tested gr, between solar system scale and between cosmology, if there is a real effect, then it should occur there. But of course, as I told you, it is an extremely tough problem to reliably discuss what happens there, and it might be that there is a visible effect, it might be that the infrared problems are healed by the theory without leaving any visible effects. I emphasize this is not known. Nevertheless, it is an exciting speculation that these observed problems with gravity at the galactic scale and beyond, which are usually attributed to dark matter, that they might have something to do with these renormalization effects. There are many, or not many, but there are models which instead of dark matter try to explain these phenomena by modified gravity, Milgram's Mond theory, for instance, and generalizations. And in a similar spirit, we did some model building on galaxies and cosmology, which exploited such phenomena. This is something we don't know. It's an exciting possibility that it could be like that. I don't know the answer. Maybe nothing special happens here. Then perhaps you need dark matter. That is one issue of what I was trying to convey as a message today. But the other issue is the fine-tuning of this turning point to this incredibly small gt lambda t. This is something which is in our language at the heart of the cosmological constant problem. The cosmological constant problem is a fine-tuning problem. We have not solved it here in the sense of avoiding fine-tuning, but we have, in a certain sense, we solved it. In another sense, we made it even worse. Namely, it is even worse in the sense if you don't do this fine tuning, then you will not get a classical relativity regime, not even with a large cosmological constant. So it's never classical. That, I think, is the, even if the truncation is a very primitive one, I think this is the kind of answer this approach could give to such issues. And, well, the conclusion is, as I told you, the infrared sector, this is sort of now a complementary discussion to yesterday, the infrared sector, the other extreme from the non-Gaussian fixed point where non-perturbative renormalizability is decided about, is a very much, much more than the ultraviolet, a difficult non-perturbative problem, and in many respects similar to QCD. These effects at the Planck, at the Hubble scale where this breakdown occurs, they are in many ways comparable to chiral symmetry breaking confinement and all these difficult issues in QCD. And my personal opinion is that before you do model building on quintessence or you invent dark matter and all that, in principle, of course, I told you it's extremely difficult, but in principle, one should first understand what gravity alone does in these regimes without putting additional degrees of freedom on an ad hoc basis. I understand I should finish. Okay, so let's stop here.